Welcome to another episode of Women on the Rise. And today I am with Female Fusion member Annabelle Harper in our studio in London. And I have wanted to sit down with Annabelle for a while. She's been one of our Female Fusion members from the very beginning. And Annabelle splits her time between the UK and the Middle East. And she is the author of a book called Shuja, which is all about bold leadership for women in the Middle East. And we're going to dive deep and talk all about that. Welcome to the podcast, Annabelle.
Thank you, Jen. It's great to be here.
Well, I'm so happy we finally get a chance to sit down and chat, because whenever I see you, you're always in between going to lots of different countries, or I am, and we never have a chance to sit down and talk. And I really want to dive deep into the work that you've been doing. But before we do that, maybe you could tell everybody just a little bit about you and about your background.
Okay, sure. So I started my first career as a journalist. So I worked for all the main broadcasters in the UK, ITN, Channel 4 News, and then the BBC, and loved it. Always interested in people. I did sociology at university as my first degree, always interested in what makes people tick. And then when I was at the BBC, I enjoyed the experience of being more in a management role and people development and where people were going in their careers, the progressions that they were going to be making. So alongside being a complete news junkie, which I still am, I enjoyed those conversations to develop people and bring out the best in people. And I felt that there was more to that I wanted to explore in my own career. So I decided to leave the BBC and went back to university to study for a master's in coaching and mentoring practice, because I wanted the academic rigour, really, of the study. Set up my coaching practice, and it was just before the recession, so it wasn't the best time to start.
Which recession was it?
So that recession was like 2008, 2009.
Okay.
So it worked. The work came about, and I loved it, absolutely loved it. And I started working at London Business School as an executive coach there as well. And through that, I did some coaching work in Dubai on their executive MBA program. And I'd been to Dubai several times on family holidays, and we loved it. And I felt very comfortable there. So this was a wonderful opportunity to actually go and work there. And that's really when my interest took off. I loved the environment. I still love the environment. I love the culture. I love the buzz of the place. And I developed a big network of friends and set up some coaching opportunities that were independent, that were part of my own business. And I just really enjoy the culture. And it's a very vibrant environment, as you know. And I particularly enjoyed learning more about the culture from the people that I was working with. And I felt that I should study more. So I did a master's in Middle Eastern Studies at King's College in London, because I wanted to learn more about contemporary history, really, and understand, get underneath the surface a little bit more. My research project was looking at the United Arab Emirate government initiatives for women in leadership.
Interesting.
And the impact that they were having on women in organisations. And my sense was that although women were in organisations more, they were sort of getting stuck in terms of development and career progression. So although the initiatives were there, I wasn't absolutely sure that they were being implemented.
But would you say that that's probably true in most countries around the world? I don't think that that's a problem unique to the United Arab Emirates, is it?
No, you're absolutely right. I think the big difference for me was the fact that the government were very vocal, are very vocal about encouraging women. And I think now it's changed a lot in the UAE. And at the time, the research that I did for my master's was partly, yes, they were kind of being stuck. There was a log jam. There was a bottleneck in terms of promotion from senior people who'd been in organisations a long time. There's also something about the women themselves not asking. And that's partly to do with culture, that they're not often expected to put themselves first. And I looked at other countries as well, and you know, there isn't equality anywhere. I mean, sadly, the situation globally, we still have a very long way to go. And in Europe, and we know in the UK and in the US, I mean, this is a constant. This is a constant.
I mean, that's why, like, and it's not just in the workplace, it's in entrepreneurship, it's within everything, that it's not a level playing field yet.
But what I do think is interesting for women entrepreneurs, although I think that the research that I've looked at in terms of them getting funding is limited. It's appalling compared with male entrepreneurs. What I do think is interesting is the rise in female entrepreneurs. And the question there is, well, why are they setting up their own businesses? They're setting up their own businesses because they can make the decisions and they can be in charge.
Yeah.
And that's the growth.
And do you know, I think for most entrepreneurs as well, it's the freedom and the flexibility that most women, that's what they're really looking for is it's like, I want to be able to have the time to do what I want to do on my terms and work with who I want to work with, hire who I want to hire, and not have to be caught up in all of the politics, because there's a lot of politics within organizations as well when you work there.
So what I'm loving is now seeing what's happening in the UAE, for example. It's changed a lot since I first started working there. But what I think is really exciting is what's happening in Saudi Arabia, where I'm now doing a lot more work. And it's a fantastic time to be involved with the women that I've been coaching, the women that I'm getting to know, the same dynamism, same, you know, huge academic ability, smart, funny, you know, really super, super smart, and are frustrated in similar ways to the women that I worked with when I first started working in the UAE.
And do you find, I've been splitting my time between the UK and the UAE for nearly two decades now. And I always used to get asked, like, oh my goodness, it must be so hard being a woman there. I used to get that all the time. Now, not so much. But then strangely, somebody last week said to me, they were like, oh, don't you find it really hard being a woman owning a business in the UAE? And I was like, no, it's amazing. But did you find initially that you were getting a lot of comments of people who were misinformed about what it's like in the region, asking like, why are you there? Why are you doing this?
Yeah, huge. Yeah. And from people that I would least expect it. Mm-hmm. So a lot of business people ask me that. Is it safe for you to go?
Yeah.
Do you not have to travel with your husband? Well, no, I don't have to travel anywhere with my husband, and I don't have to travel there with my husband. Somebody said to me, who was a GP, but don't you have to walk behind men? This was a few years ago now. And it's so absurd. And I feel I get quite annoyed, really, because I think that certainly business people should be better informed.
Yeah.
And that's just, you know, that's stereotyping. And people do that with lots of different countries, don't they?
So, of course.
You know, that happens a lot.
And I think especially if you haven't traveled and haven't been there, you don't know what you don't know. So you know what you see on social media, which isn't true a lot of times, or what is in the newspaper, which is maybe not also true. So you form this bias without even knowing that you have a bias.
I've had nothing but kindness shown to me by men in particular at any time I've been in the region. Helpful, funny, very, very considerate of me, wanting to help. Absolutely charming. I've felt very safe. It's very safe. That's the other thing that people are surprised about.
It's interesting, isn't it, that it is that people have that bias until they go there and then they realize. And I think even I remember the very first time that I went to the region, I went to Saudi Arabia. Even before I went to the UAE, I went to Saudi Arabia. And I didn't know what to expect. And young me, I would have been like in my early 30s. I was like, okay, let's just go and I'll see. I'll see what it's like. And even then, when there were, it was a lot harder, like back then, that it still was very surprising to me. And the whole region was very surprising.
Mm. I've often been asked, what is it about working there that draws me? I found it difficult to articulate, but I think it's because it's partly to do with my background. My mother was from a big family. My husband's from a big family. So family's always been very important. The whole kind of process, you know, sitting down with meals and it being noisy and fun and laughing, and that's all been very familiar to me. And there's so much about the relationship as well, that you build a relationship with anybody, they'll go out of their way to help you. That's yeah. always been my experience. And I've had so many doors opened for me by people who I've got to know, and they've gone out of their way to help me. Mm-hmm. And I don't see that in my experience anyway of working in other countries. I don't see the same reciprocity to that level. There's something very special about the respect for those relationships and the whole the rituals of family and the rituals of food and faith.
Yeah.
It runs through. And I also think that's what adds to the challenge for a lot of people now, because there's so much change happening, especially in Saudi Arabia, and a lot of people are struggling to adjust to this new way of going.
So there's a couple of things I wanted to ask you about. And one, I think, is something that for people who haven't been to the region, especially coming from more Western cultures, can find it a bit frustrating that you can't always go and expect to build relationships after one visit and have that business deal. Because it doesn't work that way. That I found, for example, one of my first contracts in that region, I ended up probably having to do about four flights over to the region because they wanted to know me. They wanted to know about me. They wanted to know my values. They wanted to know about my business. And I remember thinking, are they just wasting my time? Like, what? Like, I just kept going back and there were more questions and more discussions. And what I realized after doing business for so long in that region is that it's all about relationships. And when I meet people from Europe who come to the region, that they get very frustrated because they're like, yeah, but I came and I had a meeting and I thought we had a deal and now they're not signing the contract. I'm like, give it 6 to 12 months.
Yeah, absolutely.
They're like, even if you think that you have a deal, you don't have a deal.
Absolutely. And I think if you're not prepared to put in the time, and if you're not prepared to be patient, it's not the right place for you to try and do business.
Yeah.
And there's almost like a dance, I feel, in a way sometimes. I remember the first time I started coaching there and I met this group that I was going to work with, and they were all exchanging sort of information about themselves, and we get them to talk about their families and kids or whatever, and then they turned to me and said, well, what about your children? Well, of course, as a coach, your coach training said it's not about you as a coach. Yeah. Don't talk about yourself. And I was thinking, I've never been asked this before about my children,
especially in business.
Show us your pictures of your children. So I get my phone out, and of course all my photos are of my dogs. They're not of my children. So now I know. And so I just recently had my first grandchild, which has been really exciting. So the people that I know who I've been working with for a while, they knew that I was having a grandchild. They wanted to see pictures of the grandchild. So, and that's quite nice, actually. It's quite nice to share that. But in a coaching context, that's been something I've had to adjust to. And in the way that I've had to adjust to working there, I think any kind of business that you're in, if you're coming into another culture anywhere in the world, you've got to learn about the culture. You've got to understand the way they work.
Yeah,
I think for a long time there's been a view that, well, we just do business this way and this is how we're going to do it.
Yeah.
And it's not a Lego brick scenario, this. You have to be subtle.
Yeah.
And they don't want to do business with people like that.
But do you know what I find really interesting as well is that throughout the region, there is a lot of desire, and I'm pretty much every country, that the people living in those countries are also very concerned about making their guests feel welcome or that they're going to fit in when they go outside. So, for example, I used to have a training company, and one of the big requests that we would get was from big companies throughout the region that would say, we would like to have protocol and etiquette training for our staff. So when they go to the UK or they go to Germany or they go to these other places, that they understand how to fit in. And I remember thinking, could you ever imagine somebody from the West doing that training before they go to another country? No, not really. And it was so deep that they were like, tell us how we behave when we have food. And, you know, what the meal is like and how do we refuse things politely if it's something that we can't eat. And I thought, our countries wouldn't do that.
No, you get that in with diplomats, don't you? Much more.
But not from a business perspective. But and I found that was really interesting.
No, that is interesting. And that's why I was sort of, I went to a business networking meeting a while back and I was really disappointed. They were very senior people in their organisations who were so, they didn't understand the culture. And I think I don't think it was just because it was the Middle East. I suspect that they may have been similar with other countries too. And I think that's part of it, you know, that there's an arrogance really about going and thinking you can just rock up and do what
get
you do.
Get a deal.
And get a deal.
But it did used to happen. I remember 20 years ago that did happen, that people would rock up from America, the UK, Germany, wherever, and they would sign deals sometimes. But then I think locally people were like, yeah, but you're not invested here. You're not invested in us. You are just coming here to make fast money, and that's not how we want to do business. And I really saw a change in that. I mean, relationships have always been really important, but there's also the view now too that whoever they do business with, they want you to care and be invested in the region.
And the other thing that I think people don't realize is that, like you were mentioning earlier about sometimes it can take months. When a decision is made, it's like, right now, yalla, we get on with it. You know, can you start
yesterday,
next week?
Yesterday, yeah. The amount of times I always got phone calls about, so could you come this afternoon? Be like, I'm in Dubai, you're in Riyadh, so no. Unless you have like some teleportation device, say like, tomorrow morning? Because there is it takes a long time to make a decision, but then as soon as the decision is made, it is like, you need to start immediately. And if you haven't been used to that, that can be quite challenging as well.
And time is different. The clock is different as well.
Yes. Yes, it can be, which can be frustrating, right? And I think, and I talk about this to our members, and I think this goes for business owners all around the world, not just for the region, is if you're a business owner, an entrepreneur, it's understanding boundaries and being good with your boundaries. Because I struggled with that when I had my business initially, that, you know, you have the people pleaser in you and you would try to make your client happy. And then I found that I was getting the requests at 11 o'clock at night and demands to have things ready for 8 o'clock the next morning. And that's not healthy either. And so I started to get quite good at boundaries and saying, you can't ask me for this at 11 o'clock at night. It will not be ready at 8 o'clock the next morning.
I think that's really important. And I think, you know, any kind of business appointment has to be clear that you're not just, and this applies everywhere, actually. It's not, you know, this is universal. You know, you're not just sitting there waiting for that person and that you've got nothing better to do with the rest of your day. So I think that's the idea of boundaries is very important. And perhaps that's quite a new concept for some people. But I think it's terribly important. And if you're doing your own thing, which I am, you know, you need to know where you are as well. So you need your schedule. You need to know that, okay, I've got these three meetings and then I've got that time later on today to focus on a new project or preparing a bid or whatever it is, you also need that structure.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
But because you're on your own, you are going to have to be, I think, and I took me a while to learn this, you have to be quite disciplined about how you, that you kind of imagine that you're your own office manager, you're your own PA sometimes or VA or whatever, that you have to actually have those kinds of conversations with yourself, because it's very easy to drift. And as you say, be a people pleaser and say, oh, well, I'll do it. You know, it wouldn't happen in an organisation. So it shouldn't really be any different just because you're running your own company.
Correct. Now, let's talk about your book. You published this, is it 2 years ago?
Three years ago.
Okay.
Yeah, in 2022. So this builds on the research that I did for my master's in terms of listening to what women had to say about what they thought women should do to get on in organisations, to get on in business. And I decided to expand it to look at the wider Middle East, not just the GCC, not just UAE, not just GCC. So I've got a lot of different women who I spoke to, who, and really they're at the heart of the book, because I asked them a series of questions about what they thought women needed to do for themselves, what they felt organisations needed to do, what were some of the barriers, and talking about the kind of challenges which I think make this unique in a way for the Middle East, in that there is a very strong cultural overlay to everything people do and the way that business is done. And it's really important to understand that. So it's partly that I wrote it for those women, but I also wrote it to hopefully help people who don't know the region or are interested to learn more about why there is this dynamic and what all the different layers are.
When you were writing this book and doing the research, was there anything that surprised you?
I think that I had imagined that women were not as confident as they were, and that the women who were getting on and doing were actually giving a rallying cry to those other women to say, this is not going to come to you on a plate. Yes, we live in environments where there's a very often a kind of hierarchical household, a patriarchal society, not in every family, but we do have that culture behind us. But actually, women need to ask. I think that's what came through, that women, you don't be passive. If you really want this to happen, you've got to ask for it. And I think that applies everywhere. I don't think that's unique to the Middle East. I'd say the same to women that I work with or meet in the UK. This, you know, if you have an ambition to be successful in organisations, look for opportunities. Look at what's not happening. You've got your job description, but look at what's not being done. Show some initiative. Come up with ideas. Ask, go and talk to people, get people to know you a bit more, but make yourself more visible. And I think the same applies in terms of the message that came through here for the book, was that actually women themselves can do a lot more about their visibility than they think they can. They have more power than they think they have. And I think it's tough for men too. And I think that organisations actually need to look at diversity and equality in the round. It's not just about making women mini-me's. It's about bringing out the best in everybody.
Yeah.
And understanding men's perspective, because men have grown up in a very particular way and have expectations, and it's about managing those expectations. I think it's really important for men to understand women's perspectives, but I think it's just as important for women to understand men's perspectives. Because it's not going to change unless men and women are in this. They're in
Correct.
This together.
Yeah. And we need to, and I say this as well, like I get asked to, like, why is there no male fusion? Why is there female fusion? And it's like, well, I would love to be able to do things for all entrepreneurs together, because there's a lot of challenges that we have together. But unfortunately, there's a lot of things that aren't equal. And when you don't have equality, you don't have fairness. Mm-hmm. And it's the same for entrepreneurship. It's for work. It's for all of these different things that mm-hmm. if men and women aren't getting access to the same opportunities, and it's not just men and women, it's also you're looking at so many different things in society today, like whether you're young, whether you're old, different cultures, different nationalities, that you need to have that diversity.
Mm. And I think because I work in the mostly in around leadership, at the moment there is a very big need for women's leadership development programs. I'd love the day to come where that's not necessary. They're just leadership development programs, and there's no definition that this is for women.
Makes it different with a women's leadership program if you say that we need to have ones dedicated just for women right now?
And I'm talking specifically about the Middle East. I still think there's a lot more that women can do on their own with other women as participating, that they can be free, they can feel freer to talk openly about what's going on. They can feel that they are just with other women. They're not with men and women, and they have to behave a certain way perhaps, mm-hmm. or that they're not heard so much. And I think that women's development programs give an opportunity for those women to be heard and give them the tools. People talk a lot about imposter syndrome. I have a problem with imposter syndrome. Yeah. I think it is old. It's old fashioned. It was a thing. It was built on research that's old. Everybody feels anxious.
Of course, it's not just men or women.
You know, everybody gets that sense of anxiety, and it's important that you feel that sense of anxiety. If it's overwhelming, then that's a different matter. But I think getting this mindset, this kind of can-do mindset, and I do quite a lot of work on this in talks and professional speaking. I think that this building this understanding that, yes, you are in this environment and in this society, but there's an awful lot more you can do as an individual, and it's that sense of empowerment. I think you get that focusing on a women's development program now, but I'd love to think that in, 10 or 15 years' time, you wouldn't need to identify any group. You could just have this program that was for everybody. At the moment, I think it's very important.
Wouldn't that be nice?
Mm. It would be great.
It would be nice. Yes. So if I pick up this book from the bookstores, and it can be, it's on Amazon?
It's on Amazon. It's online. Yes. It's okay. Audible. I've recorded an Audible version of it. So,
Okay.
Yeah.
So what will somebody take away from this book?
So what they'll take away is a little bit of the history of the region, to put it into sort of context if they don't know about it. And then looking at the picture globally, because I think that's really important to put it into that framework. You know, that there are problems for women to develop their careers all over the world.
Yeah.
Giving examples of other countries where things have happened, and I've used quite a few examples of UK, obviously. And then kind of what you need to do, some kind of tools and tips. So that's around, being yourself, thinking about your presence. So there's a chapter on each of those things. What are the skills that all leaders, in my view, need to have, are the kind of non-negotiables?
Can you tell me what they are?
So I think the most important thing that anybody can do is to be a good listener, is to listen. And to me, that's a non-negotiable. And you can't really know what's going on. You can't communicate well if you don't listen. And the thing about listening is that when people are feeling listened to, it improves the quality of their thinking. So for me, that is absolutely set in stone, listening.
Okay.
And I think the next thing is to build your own self-awareness. Understand yourself. Understand what you are good at, understand what your strengths are, understand what your buttons are, what are the triggers for you, the things that annoy you, we all have them. And then put yourself in other people's shoes and develop this sort of social awareness, social intelligence, if you like. So the emotional intelligence about yourself, the social intelligence about putting yourself in other people's shoes. How do I come across to that other person? And then there's also cultural intelligence. And I think those three go together. You need to understand the culture of the organization that you're in. You need to understand the culture of the individual. So it's all looking at the kind of mini system of the individual, the bigger system in the team, the bigger system in the organization, and what's going on around you. So understanding a little bit about that. And then just being leaderly, if you like, it's about your presence. It's not the title. You can have any title. You can have the grand title, but it's your way of being.
But some people, it is about the title for them. So how would they get over that?
So then that's working with them and understanding, getting them to understand what it is that they're attached to about the title and how they're being in that job role, and actually helping them to understand how you're being in that role and your sense of presence in that role. That's what matters. That's what gets people saying, yes, I'll do this for you, not just because you're the boss. And I'm talking about leaders at all levels here, not just senior. I'm talking about, you could be a junior team lead with one direct report, but it's a presence. And you wouldn't necessarily have that presence all the time, but in moments you have the presence of being a leader. And that's what's going to take, you know, bring people with you. So you're bringing them with you. And your job as leader is to look at the bigger picture all the time. Mm. And the problem is that a lot of people get promoted into leadership roles who've been very, very good managers. They can't then let go in a leadership role. They've got to keep fiddling around and getting involved and worrying too much about the detail. And it's about letting go and just standing back and having a big picture view. Yes, of course, if there's a crisis, they've got to get stuck in. But it's for me, it's very much about a way of being. If you think about people that you respect and admire in public life or friends or something, it's their presence. It's how they are with you, how they make you, you know, how they make you feel. That, to me, that's what leadership part, you know, the most important part of being a leader, that's what it's about.
That's really interesting. You spent a lot of time in Saudi recently. Mm. How have you found the changes?
I think it's astonishing. It's every time I go, and I've been, last year I was there twice, and even in the 6 months between the two visits, there were dramatic, there's just a kind of, it's more relaxed. It feels more relaxed. It feels more comfortable. There's a real energy. And what I think is wonderful is the people that I work with are so excited to be in the workplace at this time in the country's history. It's a momentous opportunity for the kingdom. And they are terribly proud of being involved and contributing to the future. And it's a real privilege to work with them, because it's like I've got a front row seat in this huge transformation. I've never worked anywhere where there's been this huge transformation going on in the country itself. And there are new things happening all the time. And it's the buzz and the energy is fabulous. It's absolutely fabulous.
And have you found as well, because women have very quickly gone from not being allowed in certain buildings. Mm-hmm. I remember I went to Saudi decades ago and women weren't allowed in government buildings, mm-hmm. to all of a sudden being allowed in government buildings, having different roles, to now being like, wow, in big roles. You see a lot of women in very big roles now. Do you see in the work that you're doing with women in Saudi, do they have any particular challenges because this has happened so fast that maybe women in other countries wouldn't have?
I think the biggest challenge is the speed of this. Change is not easy for a lot of people, and this has been so fast. It's been faster, in my view, than it was in the UAE, and even that was significant. And when you think of what's been going on in the kingdom in the last 3 years, 4 years. they talked about the 2030 vision in 2016 when they put it together, but here we are, you know, it's only 6 years away. And so suddenly, wow, it's kind of, you know, rocket fuel.
And I think they already met their 2030 vision and now they're on 2040 vision.
Yeah. So, you know, there's still a lot that they want to achieve in the next 6 years. So I think that one of the challenges is the adjustment for some people. And for men and women, actually. So some of the adjustment might be even coming from family, you know, where parents are having to kind of see their young adult, you know, children, now adults, obviously, suddenly in a different kind of world, or their, you know, that their daughters are suddenly doing different things or having more freedom at work. And so there's an adjustment there. But I think there's also an adjustment in the organisation too. And suddenly you've got women who are now running teams of men, and they might have expected to get that promotion just because they might have expected to get that promotion. So I think it's that still, this sort of, you know, the juxtaposition of these two. But I, amongst the people that I work with, there is an understanding, but there's still the odd comment that makes me think, there's still a little way to go here.
Yeah. But look, you have that everywhere in the world.
Yes.
And I think this is what's interesting, is that you'll have people still with their stereotypes about working in Saudi or the UAE or other places. And you're like, but it's exactly the same in the UK or Canada or Australia or America. Women are still having the same challenges all over the world.
Yes, I mean, and I sometimes hear about things that are happening here in the UK, and I think, oh, come on, you know, this was going on when I started working. Are we still using that kind of language? So why it's so hard to normalise this, I don't know. I don't know. I'll never know why it's taking so long, why it's going to take over 100 years for there to be global equality, I don't know. So it's enormously frustrating. I mean, my daughter talks a lot about what goes on in her world and things that she hears from friends of hers. And I think, you know, this is the UK, you know.
It's ridiculous sometimes to me. I don't like to go into complaining and talking about things like this, but it's also, it goes to show me when I have these conversations with friends where sometimes we'll be like, why is this so hard? It is really hard being in this area. But then also as well, the conversation we have is that, well, who else is going to do it?
Yes.
Right? You know, because I want my daughter in 30 years from now to be thinking, like, isn't it crazy that, like, 30 years ago that, you know, women didn't get equal pay or access to the same sorts of contracts? Be like, that's ridiculous. It's totally not like that now. I like to hope that we can make that change.
And the main reason that I wrote this, by the way, is because after I did my research for my master's, and that was all finished and everything, I had got to know a lot of women, and I carried on seeing those women and talking to women and coaching women as well, but got to know a lot of women. And one or two of them I would have conversations and say, you know, there's so much going on here, and I want to do more. What can I do? And one of them said to me, write a book. And I said, why? And she said, because if we wrote that book, it would not be taken seriously.
Wow. That's powerful, isn't it?
And I was so shocked. And I thought, right, okay, then that's the challenge. You know, I'm not an expert, but if that's a way to represent some of this, then I'll do it.
Wow. And you have been working internationally. Number of business owners find that hard to think about, that they think, well, I'll work in my specific market. And the idea of working in different countries seems so strange that they would never even attempt doing that. What made you want to take your business international?
I've always been interested in travel. I've always been curious about other countries. I grew up in Germany, lived there till I was seven. we travelled a lot as a family. I've always been interested in how other people live their lives and the differences and the similarities between my life. And I've always been interested, as I said earlier, in what makes people tick. So for me, it was an additional element to the experience of doing the coaching work that I do. And in coaching, some of the same issues come up. Doesn't matter where you're working, but yeah. It has meant that I've been able to see other environments where the culture of the place maybe does have make a difference. And I learn all the time. I love to learn. And I love travel independently as well. I like traveling outside work. That's what I learn an awful lot from, pushing myself physically. And I think that you've got to be prepared to go beyond your comfort zone. I mean, for me, it was sort of doing some extreme physical events, like going to Peru to Machu Picchu and trekking the Masai Mara. And then a couple of years ago, I went to the Norwegian Arctic and had an amazing time with huskies and wild camping in temperatures of minus 25, which was tough, but it pushed me beyond my comfort zone. I would say the approach is try it. Put your toe in the water and experiment. Push yourself. I think it's very important in an organisational context, but if you're running your own business, you need to be fresh. You need to keep fresh. You need to have new ideas. You need to know what's going on beyond your horizon all the time. Be aware. Be aware of what's out there. Be aware of what other people are doing. Always have an eye on the competition. What else are they doing that's different? What could you bring in maybe to your business that keeps you and your unique brand you? But if you don't add that fresh air to what you're doing, I think you risk becoming very stale. It's an iterative process.
So true. And it's just continuously innovating and travel and working internationally. Helps as well to open up your mind and horizons for that.
Yeah.
When you wrote this book, was it the first book that you ever wrote, or have you written other books before?
I started writing a novel a few years ago and I didn't get very far with it. Ah. So this is my first venture into writing.
I would love to know, because we do have a lot of listeners who always say, you know, I have a book in me, a couple of books, and I want to write a book. What would be your advice to women who have that book in them but don't know how to get started?
I would say get a book coach. That's what I did, and it worked for me. It was quite a revelation, because here I was as a coach, having a book coach who was holding me to account, and I was committing to what I was going to be doing each week. But for me, that's what worked. It helped to sort out my ideas. It gave me a structure.
And so tell me what it's like, because I can imagine that people are listening to this going, but what does a book coach do? So what does that look like? How long did it take you to write your book? Was it a couple of months?
No, it was during the pandemic. So I had the advantage there that I wasn't travelling, although I hated not being able to travel, but I had the advantage there that I was at home. So I structured my day so that I had writing time every single day.
Okay.
And so that was, if you like, it was a benefit to me that I was at home. So I managed to schedule coaching calls and then and anything else I was doing, and then I had writing time every day. So I had a structure. I worked with a group. And we had weekly meetings and we had check-ins. And so there was a kind of process to go through. And it was reasonably quick. I think, to be honest, if it had gone on and on and on, I might not have finished it, but I had deadlines. And for me, that was what was really helpful.
And did you self-publish this book, or did you have a publisher for it?
No, I had a publisher. I had a coach, and she put me in touch with the publisher, and we worked together.
Amazing. And so after having done all of this, would you do another book?
I'd love to do another book.
Yeah?
I'd love to do another book. I love writing. I love to write. I'm currently studying for my D-Prof, and there may be a book out of that research when I get to it. The research will be focused on Saudi Arabia. I'm not quite sure of the shape of it, but it'll be similar to what I've written about already.
And did you find, because I'm asking all of these questions because we have listeners who want to write a book. Mm. Did you find that when you published your book, that it really gave you the opportunity to have more speaking engagements or deliver more training, that it added extra credibility to you and what you were doing?
Completely. Completely. It made a terrific difference. And it opened doors. It introduced me to people. It put me in arenas that I would have found very difficult to get into, I think, if I hadn't had the book.
Interesting. I know someone who published a book, and I think she said that her investment from, you know, having a book coach and doing all of these other things, that she had spent probably about $30,000 doing this whole process of a book. But she said, I got back at least $500,000 from doing it, that it might have cost me money at the beginning. And it was a little bit scary going, I have to spend this money having a book coach, doing all of these other things. And I can't remember if she self-published or not, but she said the return on investment from having the speaking gigs to delivering training to just generally having a bigger audience, the credibility that it adds.
I think the key for me is what is the credibility, you know, and yes, I mean, it's washed its face, as they say, in terms of my input, you know, the output that I had at the beginning. But I think it's the credibility. It gives you that little bit of extra something, and people love having a book.
Yeah,
you know,
I like having to be able to hold the book and the pages. Yeah. So, if people want to read the book, where can they find it?
So it's on Amazon. It's on Audible. It's on various online bookstores, you know, usual places.
Excellent. Well, Annabelle, thank you so much for sharing all of your wisdom and sharing your journey with us on the podcast.
It's been great. Thanks so much for having me.
You're welcome. It can be quite an adventure having a business. You have your highs and you have your lows, and sometimes that can all be in one day. And one of the challenging things that you can face is you don't know who you can talk to. Well, within Female Fusion, we have thousands of female entrepreneurs from around the world who are the most beautiful community, who are there to help women every step of the journey when you have a business. The doors to our membership are open now. And if you are a female business owner, we would love to have you be a member of Female Fusion. All you need to do is go to femalefusionnetwork.com/join.